Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 28, 2010, and you're listening to show number 59 of Who's Reading the Organon? We'll be reading aphorism number 25 after a little introduction. First off, for all those new folks listening in, this is our radio show of two friends talking to each other and studying the Organon, trying to make it more comprehensible and understandable. Okay, we might take a little bit until Vera gets in because she's having trouble with the network, but we shall carry on. And I'm going to ask her to recalculate how many aphorisms we've completed. I put up on the group that we've done about 73. No, we have 73 completed. Well, take a look and see what we've got there. And it's the goal is to complete reading the entire Organon and all of the aphorisms in the time span of 1 year. So we are really on our way. Regarding the inspirational quotes for today, I have one from Manifest Future on Twitter that says, "To be aware of a single shortcoming in oneself is more useful than to be aware of a thousand in someone else." That is a quote from the Dalai Lama. On the network, Dr. Prasad Arvind Rasal has got a lot of activity going with the understanding the rubric with a case. Many people have gone beyond his original case and have posted some of their own queries and questions about particular language and behavior that is seen by an individual and how to find the correct rubric. Thank you so much, Dr. Prasad. Also, Dr. Harish Kumar Shinde has posted a question which has not had any answers yet, and the question is, can homeopathic potencies get disturbed in a magnetic field? Maybe all of us are wondering about this question. In this light, I received a message this morning from Steve Freeman that says, electricity helps us understand the hidden force within creation. It cannot be grasped with any of the five senses. We can only know it from its effects and causations. Yet, from it, we derive great light and power. Wow, turn on the light. And I received another message from a believer, and that's A-B-E-E-L-I-E-V-R on Twitter. She says, I know, she's talking in a response to somebody else on Twitter, I know, but I have a feeling we shall cross paths at some point. Honestly, Twitter has shown me how possible that is. Hi, Vera. I hear you pop in there.
Hi, Debbie.
There with us?
Yep,
hi.
I'm here.
Okay, I covered the bases, and one more thing. As a piece of information from Natural News, I received their e-newsletters, something of great importance regarding social interactions and your community. He says it's true and is very surprising, but new research shows that changing your social environment can literally cure cancer by causing tumors to shrink or disappear. It's almost as if having the right friends is a kind of social cancer cure. And this is coming out of a new study published in the July 9th issues of the journal called Cell, found that when mice with cancer were given enriched living conditions and a boost in their social life, their tumors shrank and some of them disappeared completely. So this is powerful evidence, the scientists say, that social connections and an individual's mental state play an important role in the way the body responds to malignancies. And I really want us to take advantage of our wonderful social network, our HWC community, and get on there, blog, interact, make friends, make it your home away from home. And we are ready to continue with study aphorism number 25.
Okay. I'll
ready
go ahead and
go?
Read. Okay.
Yes, please.
Right. Now, however, in all careful trials... Oh, wait a minute. Before we go to aphorism 25, are we clear about why we give remedies to healthy people?
I think we are.
We
are
started
finding...
doing it before the weather interrupted.
Aha, that's true. Well, on the HWC website, I have put up yesterday's little talk because I know we had a lot of electrical interference by the weather and the thunderstorms and everything. So it did come in kind of fuzzy, but the message was pretty clear that, and if you can go to the group, I did post it up there,
mm-hmm.
about this particular aphorism number 24, that we are matching the what makes someone sick and what we're finding the symptoms that are incurred when we take a remedy into a healthy person. So we're matching those two things. Let's see if I have it written there correctly. I tried to do it. Take a look and see. You
mm-hmm.
want to refresh our memory again?
Well, the thing is, this is part of why we were talking about yesterday when we were so rudely interrupted by the thunderstorms, about why Hahnemann is hammering these points home. In fact, why does he hammer the points home? And the truth is, he hammers the points home because we say, yes, yes, we understand, let's move on, but we haven't really absorbed it. It's not mm-hmm. something that we know in the deep sense. It's something that we've absorbed intellectually, perhaps. But not to the extent of if somebody wakes you up in the night and says, why give a remedy to a healthy person? What's the point?
Yes.
And okay. on the one hand, we say we give a remedy to see what it can do to a healthy person by the law of similars. But to take it back down to a more brass tacks place, I think, not tax, T-A-X, but T-A-C-K-S, we're giving the remedy because we know, or Hahnemann is explaining to us, that anything that can alter the state of health in a person is medicinal. So if we want to find out things that are medicinal, even for starters, we need to look at what has the ability to alter the state of health in a person
mm-hmm.
in fairly reasonable amounts and sometimes in extreme amounts. So we're giving remedies to healthy people to see, can this substance alter the state of health in a healthy person? And if it can, then it might be able to alter the state of disease in a sick person. If
okay.
it can interact with us on that deep level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to 25.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Had enough?
No, I love it.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I have created a brand new little imagery on the group, main BTR group website, and it's a picture of a hammer, and it's especially for you, hammering away at us, and at the end of the line is a treasure chest, so hopefully we will open to the gold when we will be the Olympic winners when we have this hammered into us enough times.
Mm-hmm.
Aphorism number 25.
Okay. Now, however, in all careful trials, pure experience, the sole and infallible oracle of the healing art, teaches us that actually that medicine, which in its actions on the healthy human body has demonstrated its power of producing the greatest number of symptoms similar to those observable in the case of disease under treatment, does also, in doses of suitable potency and attenuation, rapidly, radically, and permanently remove the totality of the symptoms of this morbid state, that is to say, the whole disease present, and change it into health. And that all medicines cure, without exception, those diseases whose symptoms most nearly resemble their own, and leave none of them uncured. Let's just hop down to the footnote. I do not mean that sort of experience of which the ordinary practitioners of the old school boast. After they have for years worked away with a lot of complex prescriptions on a number of diseases, which they never carefully investigated, but which, faithful to the tenets of their school, they considered as already described in works of systematic pathology, and dreamed that they could detect in them some imaginary morbific matter, or ascribe to them some other hypothetical internal abnormality. They always saw something in them, but knew not what it was they saw, and they got results from the complex forces acting on an unknown object that no human being, but only a god, could have unraveled, results from which nothing can be learned, no experience gained. 50 years' experience of this sort is like 50 years of looking into a kaleidoscope filled with unknown colored objects and perpetually turning round, thousands of ever-changing figures, and no accounting for them.
Comments?
Does he say it, or does he say it?
Aha, you like this one. And what sticks out in your mind from this entire lengthy aphorism and footnote? Something that catches your imagination?
There's the whole element of methodology, of being methodical. One of the things that Hahnemann talks about elsewhere in his lesser writings, but he talks about it within the Organon, and here is an example. You can have so much experience, but if your experience is not methodical, is not based on principle, then what will you know? And he speaks elsewhere about how conventional medicine, allopathic medicine, finds out its medicines by chance. You know, oh, this happened to help with this. Let's write down that it also helps with this. There's no basic principle. They gave this several hundred years ago for gout, and now we're finding, oddly, that it cures headache as well. Okay, so we'll give it to people with headaches. It didn't cure your headache? Well, maybe you'll get gout. There's lack of method, and he's, in some ways, I think he's describing his own experience as a doctor, as an allopathic doctor. Not that he worked at it for 50 years before becoming disillusioned, but seeing the doctors around him, and he must have seen the people who really were working hard to try and alleviate human suffering. But he's saying, you can't do it based on this method because it's not a method. Like he says, they always saw something in them but knew not what it was they saw. And they got results from the complex forces acting on an unknown object, results from which nothing can be learned. And that's terrible. That's like a treadmill of work with no moving forward. That's what he saw. That's what we see today.
Getting stuck in this little treadmill. And I'm wondering, what was it that he imagined when he talked about this kaleidoscope as a description? I think of a child's toy with bits of colored glass in it, and also the way it is, looking at looking through this glass, I think of microscope, how scientists and researchers and physicians, they're looking in the microscope at some fractures of light and you know, this pattern of what it is that they're searching for within the glass. And here in the kaleidoscope is these fractured glasses and that creates a pattern. But do they know what they're really looking at?
I think also, I don't know about in America, in Europe, certainly in England, there were kaleidoscopes, there are kaleidoscopes that are far from being children's toys. They're really works of art. And you look through
gorgeous.
Them, They're absolutely gorgeous. And there's also a sense of what you're looking at could be amazing, could be incredible. But if you cannot sort it out, if you have no governing principle, it's useless to you. You can appreciate the arbitrary art involved, but you can't recreate it. Not exactly the same thing.
There is a method to the kaleidoscope, or is there not? On some of them, I suppose.
Some of them.
They all create a kind of fractured pattern based on the numbers of glass. So there is structure within that.
I think the ones that are based on a certain number of pieces of glass that you literally shake up, there is no structure. Just the, you could say, the colors involved. But there are some that aren't based on bits of glass. They're based on an arrangement of mirrors inside, but that's something else.
Right.
Anyway.
The ones with the mirrors. Okay. So what else did I want to mention on this? Oh, yesterday after we were talking, I was thinking that we were two halves of a whole, how you're the based on principle, you're the essence of principle and wanting to see the method and how things work, and I am into the theoretical aspect so much, and I want to understand his thinking and how he came to the principle, and I think it's a good match. What else did I want to tell you today about this particular aphorism number 25 that he's repeating again the totality of the symptoms of this morbid state. So he's reiterating again that we need to see the totality of what has changed, what is in the disease. And so this is the whole disease that is present that he's telling us to look at, where the health of the individual has changed. Also, homeopaths do take a good look at when there have been accidental poisonings, but they are able to use that in relation to the methodology, the basic fundamental laws and principles which have been laid down in the Organon, and not happenstance, not say what's happening and, oh, this is, for instance, snake poisonings are now being used for heart disease. And we have been, homeopaths have been using it for blood and derangements and heart disease and coagulation and things like that for a very long time. But they're just kind of learning about it now. So, is that funny? Okay.
Yeah. Although it's the kind of thing that in original form was probably has been known in different cultures of healing.
Yes, I'm sure, for many, many ancient years about snake poisons.
Let's just look back at aphorism 25, at the aphorism itself, because we talked about footnotes.
Okay.
I think it's just logical progression.
Okay. Yes, that's why I was saying that he was repeating again to refresh our minds and about what the morbid state is. And he also is saying here, rapidly, radically, and permanently removed, which are, besides a little bit of alliteration, very strong effects of an attenuated potency. So he's saying that it can have a very strong and permanent effect on the diseased state and change it back to health.
What I find curious, though, is that he doesn't repeat the word gentle. Rapid, radical, and permanent. Because in aphorism 2, he talks about cure being rapid, gentle, and permanent. Here we have rapid, radical, and permanent. Which
and
is curious
is to
me. It's curious to me because I have heard from others that gentle Hanuman was referring to gentle in comparison to what was being done in his day or what's being done by conventional medicine. But that complete cure it's not possible for complete cure to be gentle. I don't know. I'm curious to hear what other people have to say. Mm-hmm.
That is true, because very often you do have to go through some aggravations, some worsening of an illness to see before you actually see the healing response. So there are a couple of ways of looking at that aspect of gentle as in comparison to the kinds of radical. Yeah, he says rapidly. He's using radical right there in that quote.
I'd like also, if I may, to hop back to aphorism 3. Aphorism 3 really presents the structure of what's going on in the organon, the structure of what's going on in Hanuman's mind as he sets this out to us. He says, the physician has to clearly perceive what is cured, what is to be cured in diseases. So here he's been telling us what is to be cured in diseases is making sure that you see the totality of disease symptoms, of what has changed, in addition to anything that may have contributed to the cause of the disease itself. Then he says if he clearly perceives what is curative in medicines, and that's what we've been talking about, how to see what's curative in medicines by giving them to healthy people, seeing what ways they're capable of disturbing health, and seeing how we can use those symptoms produced to act on the symptoms similar that are observable in cases of disease. And now in aphorism 25, he is telling us how also the remedy in doses of suitable potency and attenuation. So we've got a hint forward, because that's the next step in terms of aphorism 3. We need to choose the remedy, and then we need to give it in correct dose, the correct potency and attenuation. So I just wanted to point that one out.
Very good. So from aphorism 3, he's elaborating now on the choice of the remedy and giving and what is indicated and telling us how we find it and then in what potency. So he's really giving us more information, not simply repeating. And this is very good.
There's an exercise that I would suggest in a way for people to note down which aphorisms tell us what is to be cured, how to find that out. Which aphorisms tell us what is curative in medicines. Because on the one hand, you can section out the organon like O'Reilly did, but on the other hand, the information is throughout. The information is in all different places as well.
And maybe he's done that for a reason, for letting our minds understand all of these aphorisms from the different ways they relate to the principles. So each time maybe he is learning something new whenever he comes across a new case or a new remedy or a new proving. Maybe each time he learns something new, he's sharing that with us. Okay. Do we want to read further?
I think we can.
Aphorism number 26?
Yeah, would you like to read?
I'll start. This depends on the following homeopathic law of nature, which was sometimes indeed vaguely surmised, but not hitherto fully recognized, and to which is due every real cure that has ever taken place. And in all capital letters, a weaker dynamic affection is permanently extinguished in the living organism by a stronger one, if the latter, whilst differing in kind, is very similar to the former in its manifestations. And then we have a footnote, and I think there's enough time to read it. Thus are cured both physical affections and moral maladies. How is it that in the early dawn the brilliant Jupiter vanishes from the gaze of the beholder? By a stronger, very similar power acting on his optic nerve, the brightness of the approaching day, the situations replete with fetid odors, wherewith is it usual to soothe effectually the offended olfactory nerves, with that affects the sense of smell in a similar but stronger manner? No, no music, no sugared cake, which act on the nerves of other senses, can cure this olfactory disgust. How does the soldier cunningly stifle the piteous cries of him who runs the gauntlet from the ears of the compassionate bystanders? By shrill notes of the fife commingled with the roll of the noisy drum, and the distant roar of the enemy's cannon that inspires his army with fear. By the loud boom of the... Oh, that was a question, by the way. And by the loud boom of the big drum, for neither the one nor the other would the distribution of the brilliant piece of uniform nor a reprimand to the regiment suffice. In like manner, mourning, that's and sorrow, will be effaced from the mind by the account of another, and still greater cause for sorrow happening to another, even though it be a mere fiction. The injurious consequences of too great joy will be removed by drinking coffee, which produces an excessively joyous state of mind. Nations like the Germans, who have for centuries been gradually sinking deeper and deeper into soulless apathy and degrading serfdom, must first be trodden still deeper in the dust by the Western conqueror until their situation became intolerable. Their mean opinion of themselves was thereby overstrained and removed. They again became alive to their dignity as men, and then, for the first time, they raised their heads as Germans. Poetry.
That's a curious
from
one.
Poetry from Hahnemann. He's showing us in our real life how we can affect this illness by some other force. So can we get rid of a disgusting odor? How do we do that? How do
he
we...
He says with snuff. With snuff.
With snuff and the noisy roll of the drum for the battle, for those who are crying in war. Oh my, he gives
but
us
the
very...
The issue of the Germans is interesting. I find I have to go back to my history books and see what exactly was going on in 1810.
Yes.
Was in the first footnote.
War?
What?
Was there a civil war and an immigration of population
in
1810?
Germany itself was only united under Bismarck in, I think, 1870, 1871.
Okay.
So that modern Germany didn't exist in Hahnemann's time.
Okay.
In Hahnemann's time, there was Prussia, there was, I think, Saxony, there were different areas which weren't united into one single country, but they had a Germanic tradition that united them. And language, I believe, as well. I don't know how different the dialects are. I'm sure that someone who's listening can correct us and inform us. But it's interesting.
Well,
it's interesting to see what he writes.
And how it applies to traditional to Germany in the past century. It's very interesting too. So yes, our time is up. We've read it, and we will have to discuss this one in more detail, especially the capital letters, which I want to say is for emphasis, and we will do that tomorrow. Any other comments about aphorism number 25?
I think we don't really have time now, so we should probably just say our Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen, guten Tag, and guten Abend. Okay. Thank everyone for listening.
Bye.
We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooke on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.